team is not.
I just said that.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm using twice. That to kind of build. I'm using that to build to. But
I just said that twice.
You gotta let me cook.
I need you to pay attention.
You gotta let me cook. See, you're sniffing my chili, but you didn't put in on this, man. The fade, not 10% of the fade, not 65% of the fade, 100% of the fade, and any extra credit fade that may be laying around. I'm done.
You're very familiar with taking the low hanging fruit and using that to boost your self esteem. You're very, very skilled in doing that. So I have no problem with that. There's no argument against that because it's cute. So simple a caveman can do it, and even that's you can do it too. Cute.
You know, don't overreact. It's only week one. No, we're not ready. No. You can get out of here. You can get out of here with it.
The offensive line looked horrible. I mean, horrible. They're putting the spin on it like they did with Jalen Smith. Oh, positive vibes. We're not going to put him on IR. Let's keep positive thoughts so that, you know, the power of mind over matter and all those things are great. But the reality is we don't know when Travis Frederick is going to come back. So we don't know how long we're going to be dealing with this combination in the middle. All right, all right, all right. You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for tuning in for another exciting, exhilarating, and awesome episode of Catch This Fade podcast. I come to you with a heavy heart, a lot of frustration on my brow. I got wrinkles all over the place. Gray hair is coming in because the Cowboys lost their season opening game, and they did it in such glorious fashion that everybody in Cowboys Nation has gone absolutely apoplectic over the state of the Cowboys. I am your host, KD Drummond. Find me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL, and that is my co-host, Patrick Walker. Say what's up to the people, Pat.
Well, to be fair, KD, it's not like you didn't have gray hair before week one of 2018. So
the ladies call it salt and pepper, and I'm going to go ahead and roll with that, okay?
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you as always for tuning in to the latest episode of Catch This Fade. KD and myself were hoping that when we spoke going into week two, it would be a much more favorable an exciting conversation, and we promise that this will in fact be exciting, but it will not be favorable as it relates to the Cowboys. So got a lot to talk about here between everything that went wrong and what we can look forward to against the Giants.
Yeah, and what we try to do on Catch This Fade, if this is your first time tuning in while we're on regular season mode, obviously in the offseason, we have a lot of fun with the show, and we're still going to have a lot of fun, but there are certain things that we have to get to in the amount of time that we have. So we don't want to dwell too much on what happened in week one. We more so want to spin that forward to what's going to happen in week two. Now, obviously, the two kind of go hand in hand. The fingers interlock when you're talking about the 2 weeks, because in a short sample size, you get a lot of information for the season based on 1 week, but that doesn't always mean that it translates to the next. We could be sitting here crying into empty jar glasses about what happened with the Cowboys week one, and then they turn around in week two, and it's an entirely different scenario. And that happens often when it comes to the NFL. Now, there are some things about the Cowboys that carried over from last year that are still troublesome, but when we're looking at the Giants, we're going to kind of take a fresh slate, use the information that we got, and then move it forward. So, about those New York Giants, they are also 0-1. They also lost their opening game, except they were at home, and now they're doing their road opener as the Cowboys open at AT&T Stadium. The series, obviously, NFC East rivals, a lot of competition there. It's been going on for decades on decades. The Cowboys actually have a 64-45-2 lifetime record against the New York Giants. Now, over the last couple years, they've exchanged sweeps. The Cowboys swept in three of the last 5 years, including 2017, when they took both contests from New York. New York swept the Cowboys in 2016. They were pretty much the only team in the regular season that could beat Dallas, because we don't count Week 17 when they were resting all of their starters getting ready for the playoffs, and they lost to Philadelphia. But they were 13-2 prior to that point with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. And I think that level that was set that season is still something that's currently hard haunting the current Cowboys, because if you could do that as rookies, the natural progression of things as you guys get more experience, even though other teams are catching up to what the Cowboys are doing, they should still be able to maintain a certain level of play that we have not seen over the last 9 games from the Cowboys stretching back to last year. So, with all that said, Pat, what is it that you're most looking forward to? Let's talk about matchups. Let's do that. Give me a matchup that you're really interested in seeing play out on Sunday that you think is going to be a key to how the game turns out.
You're going to have to give me DeMarcus Lawrence versus Ereck Flowers. You're going to have to give that to me early, often, and for 60 minutes of football. Ereck Flowers is arguably, if you thought Chaz Green was bad, and yes, he was, Ereck Flowers is that much worse. Because here's the difference between Ereck Flowers and Chaz Green. Chaz Green was actually a serviceable NFL player before the Cowboys broke him. Okay. Ereck Flowers has never been anything but the Ereck Flowers that we see right now, which is a turnstile within the New York Giants organization. But he's going up against DeMarcus Lawrence, coming off of a 14.5 sack season in 2017, a career best for him. And then everybody was, you know, saying, well, hopefully, you know, he hasn't lost any steam or he can kind of pick up where he left off. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you saw week one, DeMarcus Lawrence picked up right where the hell he left off. Okay. Yep. He landed the key sack against Cam Newton later in the game, but he had the second most tackles on the team. He had 7 total, 3 of those were for a loss, right? So he was definitely getting penetration. He was back there. And that was against a Panthers team that, although they had some issues at tackle, they didn't have Ereck Flowers at tackle. Right? So I predict that you're going to see at least 2 sacks from DeMarcus Lawrence alone. And I'm curious to see how the Giants are going to try to handle that, because Eli Manning came out today being Wednesday ahead of the game, and said that, you know, the coaching staff, they recognize the greatness of DeMarcus Lawrence and they're going to try to scheme for him. But how do you do that knowing that Randy Gregory is going to be back on the field? He's expected to be back from that concussion protocol and from that knee injury, that meniscus injury. He said he's going to be all right, Cowboys believe. So, doesn't look like the reports that have been coming out are holding water. Surprise, surprise, right? Mm-hmm. So, if Randy Gregory does in fact play and he plays a hefty amount of the snaps on the right edge, what we saw last week, hey, we even saw Taco Charlton have more snaps than DeMarcus Lawrence. So this defensive front is going to give that offensive front fits, but it's going to start and end for me with what happens on that left edge with DeMarcus Lawrence and Ereck Flowers, because I don't see how they're going to be able to slide protection that way unless they want the blind side of Eli Manning to be absolutely obliterated.
I cannot complain about that matchup. It is actually something that I am looking forward to. If you've been paying attention to what the New York media is saying, obviously they are absolutely killing Ereck Flowers. But the interesting thing that's coming out of it is the New York Giants don't have any possible other options. They brought in somebody that they wanted to compete. He's injured for the year. And there's really nobody on the street that's going to be an improvement over Ereck Flowers. So the only thing they can do is then try to alter their playing style. They love to have Evan Engram out as a receiving tight end. He's a glorified wide receiver in the tight end's body. He doesn't really stay in the block all that often, and that will many times leave Flowers on an island, and you're just asking for trouble. You're begging for trouble leaving that dude on an island against DeMarcus Lawrence. I will be thoroughly disappointed if Lawrence doesn't have 2 sacks in this game. If not more, but I'm just going to say that if he only has 1 sack, I will say that they didn't take true advantage of the situation.
Absolutely. And that's where I am. I honestly want to throw out 3 sacks for DeMarcus Lawrence. And I don't think that's a hot take. I don't think that's a reach, but I am tempering it a bit simply because you just never know if the refs are going to call the game fairly with the holding penalties and things like that. But there should be a solid 2 sacks there for DeMarcus Lawrence on Ereck Flowers. And going back to what you said about Engram, he is in fact a glorified wide receiver. So what the Giants would do if they did choose to use him as a chip blocker to kind of help Ereck Flowers with DeMarcus Lawrence, the problem there is that now you're helping to kind of negate one of your more powerful offensive weapons, because if you're using Evan Engram as a chip blocker, then all that's going to do is help the Cowboys linebacker core cover Evan Engram. So what are you going to do there, Giants? I don't think they have an answer for that, like you said. So for me, it all begins and ends with that matchup between Lawrence and Flowers.
And the interesting thing is going to be what also happens on the other side, because Nate Solder's on the opposite side. They're a big free agent signing, and he didn't look very good. Everybody's talking about the Cowboys issues. The Giants front had absolutely no answers for that Jacksonville Jaguars front four on their defensive side. I mean, Calais Campbell was doing whatever he wanted with Flowers, but the other guys as well were doing a lot of work when it came to going up against the Giants offensive line. Nate Solder wasn't impressive. Rookie Will Hernandez, he, even though he's much stronger than Connor Williams, he was experiencing issues as well. Their guy Patrick Omame, the other guard John Halepio, the center, nobody stood out for that Giants offensive line. So I think that up and down for the Cowboys, including who had a great game, Taco Charlton, even though he didn't register
the sack.
But Taco Charlton, Malik Collins, I think those guys are really going to be able to get in there and pressure Eli Manning, and it's going to be imperative because the weapons that the Giants do have, they have to be neutralized by the Cowboys getting pressure. There's no other option about it. There's no way they're going to fully stop the Giants' offense with all those weapons, Barkley and Beckham and Shepard and Engram, without getting pressure and cutting down Eli's chance, Eli's time to scan the field and find an open guy.
That's absolute science. And then going back to what you were saying as far as naming guys across the board, that's like Taco Charlton, Malik Collins, honorable mention to guys like Daniel Ross. Okay. Yes. Honorable mention to a guy like Daniel Ross, who the Cowboys poached away from the Kansas City Chiefs practice squad, much like they did David Irving. And Daniel Ross, you saw how impactful he was in the first game, forcing that fumble. But over the course of his 17 snaps, he was rated by PFF as the highest graded defensive player in the league in week one, not lineman, player. Defensive player. That is absolutely phenomenal. So shouts out to Daniel Ross for coming on and coming on strong. And if he can continue to do that, and we've seen what Antoine Woods is capable of, that interior complements the exterior, and that Giants offensive front is in for a long, long afternoon.
Now, let me talk to you about my matchup that I'm going to be.
I was going to say, who you got? Because I absolutely nailed it, as you knew I would.
Yeah, of course. I have no problem with that.
Follow that up.
You're very familiar with taking the low-hanging fruit and using that to boost your self-esteem. You're very, very skilled in doing that. So I have no problem with that. There's no argument against that because it's so simple. A caveman can do it, and even you could do it too. So my top matchup that I'm worried about for this game. See, you went positive. I'll go negative because that's kind of how we're built. How are the Cowboys going to stop the combination of Dalvin Tomlinson and Damon Harrison? Snacks Harrison is a 340-pound absolute load, and Dalvin Tomlinson is 320 pounds, and he's not much off from what Harrison can do. I'm worried about the interior of the Cowboys' offensive line. I'm worried about not necessarily Joe Looney's technique, but I'm certainly worried about Connor Williams' strength. And having to face somebody, a nose tackle, the stature of Damon Harrison is an issue for me with the Cowboys simply because of what we saw. Jeff Schwartz came up with a great GIF that showed the problems with the Cowboys and recognizing what they need to do as far as dealing with stunts, dealing with tricks, loop arounds, all those sorts of things that an offensive line has to have straight before the snap, that Travis Frederick used to be the one that called out everything. So when you're dealing with those sorts of things, that's really where you see the step down from Frederick's level to what Joe Looney can do. Technique-wise, he's decent. He's definitely passable when it comes to technique-wise. But the Cowboys have to kind of work out what it is they're doing as far as the line calls. And I'm not surprised that they had issues because of how little they worked in the preseason. And one of the big debates that we've had on Twitter is that the Rams came out, they didn't do much in the preseason, they looked great in their first game. Yeah, but they didn't have the same situation the Cowboys did. The Cowboys not getting any work in the preseason didn't allow the offensive line without Travis Frederick to gel together, and it didn't give Dak Prescott the chance to actually get back there on several occasions and feel comfortable with the fact that he doesn't have Travis Frederick handling his protections for him. And I think that's what you saw. Many times in the first game against Carolina, you saw some issues with them being able to deal with those sorts of stunts, getting the right guy, who's going to cover who. We saw issues 6 sacks on the game. It was pretty much a pathetic display out of what we're used to seeing. Now, you can say individually, man on man, there were issues. Tyron Smith might have played the worst game of his career. He didn't play very much during the preseason. But all in all, what these guys are going to be able to do against this new 3-4 front out of the New York Giants and James Betcher coming over from the Arizona Cardinals, it's a very concerning thing for me how they're going to deal with that front, because those two guys are dynamic, and I'm a little bit worried about the Cowboys' ability to deal with that kind of power, get a running game going. We've all known that they've struggled in the past against 3-4 defenses. So kind of seeing what they're going to do against this new look Giants defense is what my eyes are going to be focused on.
And that's solid, and I agree there. I think that for me, there's an easy workaround for it, but my concern is, will this offensive coordinator in Scott Linehan figure it out? And if he does figure it out, will he be willing to adjust on the fly? Because he's going to have to adjust on the fly. This is a Giants defensive coordinator that will not hold firm to one particular game plan over the course of 4 quarters. So he's going to adapt. Will Scott Linehan adapt? We'll see. But the answer, I believe, is obvious. You're probably not going to have a lot of success running up the A and B gap, to your point, because Connor Williams has some strength issues, and then you don't have Travis Frederick there, which is not a knock to Joe Looney, because Joe Looney has been technically sound. He was the only one who didn't give up any QB pressures over the course of the week 1 outing against the Panthers. But that interior has questions. So and you're probably not going to get a ton of success trying to run off the edge because of those edge rushers. Now, here's what could work in the Cowboys' favor, because right now, all-pro defensive end Olivier Vernon, he's kind of 50-50 right now as we have this conversation on Wednesday with a high ankle sprain. So if it turns out that
he's not going to play. He's not going to play.
You don't believe so?
No, I don't think he has any chance of playing. They're going to hold him out until next week. I will be absolutely floored if he lines up. I think they're going to play this little dance to make the Cowboys think that he might be there, but everything that I'm hearing from the New York media is that the smart thing for the Giants to do is still go ahead and sit Vernon for this week and then bring him back for week 3.
Which would make sense, especially when you're dealing with a high ankle sprain, and we know how easily aggravated and the setbacks that can come from that. So if, in fact, it holds true, and our assumption is that Vernon doesn't play, okay, well, now you have a better shot at attacking the edge with some of those counters and screen plays. You're going to have to use the over-aggression by the defensive front of the Giants against them, but that's also going to be predicated upon, are we going to see Dak Prescott use his legs when he needs to use his legs? Him not doing so is a combination of poor play calling and indecision and poor decision making, right? Because we saw clean pockets in week 1 where he exited much too soon, okay? But then we saw pockets that were breaking down where he didn't exit at all. And so he has to be better at knowing when to take off and when not to take off. And like I said on Twitter earlier this week at Voice of the Star, shameless plug, at a certain point, Dak Prescott, if he really wants to make an impact and prove in this third year, the most pivotal of his football career, potential contract talks coming up in the next few months, he's going to have to tune out the noise. And I'm not saying that he's going to be Romo or anything like that, but Dak is smarter than the average bear when it comes to football IQ. We saw when the Cowboys went to a hurry-up offense, you noticed how that offense finally started to move? It was just a too little, too late situation, but that gives me a lot of confidence that if you let Dak go out there and read the defense and then cut loose, which also means, you know, making him feel comfortable and empowered enough to take off and run when it's time to run, like we saw Cam Newton do, getting those third down conversions, then I think this Cowboys team has a chance to, you know, make that matchup that we're talking about with like Snacks Harrison and that interior work for them. But if you're talking about going head up with that and trying to run Ezekiel Elliott up that A-gap, I don't think that's going to end well, because as much of a beast as Ezekiel Elliott is, like you said, Snacks Harrison is a building with legs and arms. Yes. So be smart about it. This is not a team that you're going to be able to bully, because you no longer have Ronald Leary at left guard. You don't have Travis Frederick in the middle right now to combine with Zach Martin. So you can't just go push guys around. You're going to have to get creative. Use Tavon
Austin. Use Ezekiel Elliott as a receiver out of the backfield. Use the legs of Dak Prescott. Make this Giants interior defense and even the edge rushers, make them pay, because they're going to try to tee off on Dak Prescott. You heard Landon Collins say today that they feel like if the game is on Dak Prescott's arm, that they feel they're going to win. So there you go, Dak. The disrespect is right there for you.
See, that's the thing. A lot of people have claimed that's disrespect. It's bulletin board material. Who the hell in the NFL is not going to say that they need to stop Ezekiel Elliott and they'll let the passing game beat them if that's what it comes down to? That's one of those obvious things. I don't even think it was really slandered towards Dak. He hasn't earned that respect of somebody that's going to go out there and dominate the team and make them pay for focusing on Ezekiel Elliott. I don't see that quote as being a big deal.
Fair, but listen to what you just said, right? Until he makes them respect it, that means they don't respect it. And what's the opposite of having respect for something? It's disrespecting something. Me personally, now this is just my take. And this, granted, and I'll be completely transparent here, this is how I see the world. I feel like if you know me and you know of me, we're not talking about strangers here. The Giants are not strangers to Dak Prescott. This is not their first time going against him. They didn't just meet on a sidewalk and shake hands and they're trying to figure out should they respect each other or not, okay? These are guys who know each other well. They've played against each other several times now in the past two seasons. And for Landon Collins to make a statement like that, although it wasn't direct shade, it wasn't direct disrespect, the fact is, like you said, he still does not have enough respect for Dak Prescott to say that, hey, you know, we know we got to stop Ezekiel Elliott, but you can't overlook Prescott because he can make plays. That's not what he said. He said, we got to stop Zeke because we feel like if Dak has to throw the ball, we're going to win the game. More or less, that's what he said. This is from a guy who's not a stranger. To me, sir, that is in fact disrespect. That's how Dak should take it. And Dak should go out there, play with a chip on his shoulder, turn the earpiece off in his headset and say, you know what? I'm going full Romo, damn it, because I can win this game. And that's what needs to happen.
I definitely do not advise in going full Romo for Dak Prescott. That is not something that I can advise.
Let me be clear. I'm not referring to the passing aspect of going full Romo. I'm talking about the taking over, you know, 60% of the play calls at the line. Okay, reading the defense effectively and hot routing and audibling and doing whatever you need to do in the moment to make sure that the play you're about to call is the best play possible. That's what I mean when I say going full Romo. As far as all the other things, it's not there. So
see, that's something that I think is oftentimes misappropriated in social media and discussions about the Cowboys is how much change in Romo did the line. We all know kill, 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 and all those things, Romo choosing between plays. Romo wasn't up at the line of scrimmage drawing plays in the grass. There were options that he was given before the play was called. If he didn't like the look, he would call the second look. But those still came in from the offensive coordinator, still came in from the coaching staff. And I'm saying that to say this. Yes, the Cowboys have struggled over the last 9 games to create offense, but we know that it's worked in the past. We know that they averaged 32 points per game between week 3 and week 9 last year before everything fell to shit with the injury to Tyron Smith and the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott. They just haven't been able to capture that magic back, and I think a lot of that has to do with the ghosts that Dak Prescott sees whenever he gets pressure. He was absolutely beaten to near death. It was like I'm not even going to go there. I was going to listen to memories of Rodney King's beating because that's how it looked when they
but can't we all just belong?
But I don't think he's ever recovered. And when I put up videos, there was like some kind of function that he was at over the off season when he was just supposed to be like throwing like a Nerf football at targets, like one of those games that you would play at Chuck E. Cheese or something like that, and his accuracy was still off. And I made a comment and everybody on Facebook was like, oh, this is the worst sight in the world. I can't believe you're talking about this. Guess what, folks? He still has those accuracy issues. On Cowboys Wire, you can find it on the top post on the page. We talked about his accuracy over the game. The first 4 of 5 passes that he threw were extremely accurate. Then Tyron Smith got a holding penalty to keep him from getting smacked. And 2 passes later, he got sacked. Ever since then, his accuracy was ridiculously bad for the rest of the game until he took off running. Bringing back, circling back to the point that you were talking about getting his way. The Cowboys have 4 players on offense that are physical mismatches for the opposing team that they can use to exploit in the opposition. Ezekiel Elliott out the backfield, Tavon Austin with his speed, Dak Prescott with his legs, and Rico Gathers out physically linebackers and safeties down the seam. For some reason on Sunday, they didn't use any of those options to their benefit.
Well, Rico didn't dress.
Right, exactly. Rico didn't even dress. Tavon Austin only played 10 snaps. They only threw it to Ezekiel Elliott three times. You know, Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, they get like 7 targets a game, and Elliott is lucky to get 4. It makes no sense. And then Dak Prescott, he only runs, he ran 5 times, so maybe there's a change coming with that. But over the first two years of his career, he's only run 3.6 times a game. These are things that they can use to exploit mismatches by the fact that they don't want to throw deep. They don't trust Prescott to throw deep, or he doesn't trust what he sees. Whatever the case may be, they don't go deep. But they have these other parts of their offense that they could be utilizing to make up the difference and still keep defenses off balance, and that's gone now. It's absolutely gone, and I have no idea why they're not capitalizing on these things, but hopefully that changes when it comes to the Giants. Let's too much talk about this. Let's go into your next matchup that you want to see.
Oh, you know why, but we'll talk about that later. My second matchup, put a pin in that shit. My second matchup, I'm looking for these, and I'm focused on defense right now, because until the offense shows me something, I'm just going to focus on the positive. And the fact is, this defense looks phenomenal. That being said, as great as they looked in week one, they still had some issues in the linebacker core, and they're going to have to step that up and bounce back in a huge way. Obviously, we're not used to seeing Sean Lee miss 4 tackles in a game, and just absolutely one of the worst games I've ever seen from him, if not the worst game I've ever seen from him over the course of his otherwise stellar career when he's healthy. So Sean Lee had an egregious game, but then apparently it rubbed off like chicken pox on Jalen Smith and Damian Wilson. Yep. Justin March Lillard, what was he doing out there? So they were just lost in the sauce, man. And we both know that they're better than this, much better than this, and they're going to have to be. So that goes to my matchup, linebackers of the Cowboys against Saquon Barkley. Mm. The Giants, they have already hinted at what they're going to try to do with Barkley, because he didn't do well when they tried to run him up the A gap, the B gap, and just kind of bully the line, because they don't have that offensive front to be able to do so. Now you have Will Hernandez there, phenomenal as far as opening up lanes for the run. We all know that before the draft, Will Hernandez was my draft lust, and you know, obviously outside of Quentin Nelson, which the Cowboys had no shot at getting, but yeah, so my guy was Will Hernandez with a 1B being Isaiah Wynn. But aside from Will Hernandez, the Giants don't have that offensive front where they can just hammer and hammer away, which is why a lot of people are still vilifying them for choosing Saquon Barkley, because you don't have that front. So what the Giants did was they kind of shot up a flare by accident to kind of give the Cowboys indication that they're going to try to pass this ball to Saquon Barkley. They're going to try to figure out how to get him in space, you know, something that the Cowboys should probably try to do with Zeke. The Giants are kind of hinting at that, because the Giants targeted Saquon Barkley 6 times out of the backfield in week one. Now, granted, it only netted them 22 total yards, but the hint is there and the hint is strong. So I think you're going to see Sean Lee, Jalen Smith, as far as the nickel goes, and then toss in Damian Wilson for the 4-3 base. That linebacker core, they're going to have to make sure that the cap stays on Saquon Barkley. They're going to have to treat Barkley like they did, like they were supposed to treat Christian McCaffrey. Okay. That's how they're going to have to handle that. The good news is they don't have to worry about Eli Manning being Cam Newton with his legs. Eli's not going anywhere. He's glued to the turf. His feet are. He's not going anywhere.
They have to wheelbarrow him off the field just when they change possession.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the good thing. The good thing is there in week two, the linebacker core will not have to also account for a potential scramble by Eli Manning. That part of the game completely negated, which works in their favor, obviously, because now they can focus on where's Saquon Barkley, what's he doing, what's his next move. And I think that's really that, plus the fact that history dictates that the Cowboys linebacker corps, particularly Sean Lee, should not have consecutive games where he plays as poorly as he did against the Carolina Panthers. So for me, my second most important matchup behind Lawrence and Eric Flowers is going to be Sean Lee and that linebacker corps against Saquon Barkley. I think as far as the defensive front goes for the Cowboys, they'll take care of him not being able to run up that middle, run up those gaps. So the Giants are going to try to wiggle him into space that could be, you know, bubble screens or ring him out in the flat, chip block, and then, you know, the pass in the flat, whatever the case may be. But when that starts to happen, and it could happen as soon as, you know, second half of the first quarter, that linebacker corps is going to have to step up, cover their asses off, and make sure that Saquon doesn't get going. Because if he does, now they're going to start keying in on trying to stop him. And then you know who else can dominate at the second level? Odell Beckham Jr. on the slant routes. You don't want to have to always worry about Barkley in front of you and OBJ behind you. Negate one, that makes it easier to focus on the other.
And that dovetails directly into what my favorite matchup or my second matchup that I want to feature is Odell Beckham Jr. versus Chidobe Awuzie.
Ooh, that's spicy.
Because I just have a little feeling that it ain't going to be Brandon Carr out there checking Odell Beckham this game. And there ain't going to be those one-handed catches.
Just a gut.
Listen.
Just a gut instinct.
Beckham is a tremendous talent. He is one of the top receivers in the game. You can put their names in a hat, mix them up. You got Antonio Brown, Michael Thomas, Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr. There's probably 5 to 7 guys, DeAndre Hopkins, that you can put in that mix as best receivers in the game, and Beckham is surely one of them. He ate last week. 11 catches on 14 targets, 111 yards, and they had Jalen Ramsey. So you know that this dude is still top-notch against the top competition in the league. We've seen him blow up. I don't think that the Cowboys are going to be able to get under his skin in week two of the season to kind of get him off of his game. And plus, that man just got paid a lot of money. If I had that kind of money, I ain't tripping off nothing.
That plus, Chidobe's not a talker.
There you go. But I do think that he's going to be able to make plays against Beckham, get a couple pass deflections. I'm not going to predict an interception or anything like that, but we know he's going to get plenty of opportunities, which he did not get against Carolina. Carolina didn't pass the ball all that much. We know the Giants are going to pass the ball up and down the field on Sunday night, especially if the Cowboys have any kind of offense to, you know, dictate the game with. How those two match up against each other, to me, is going to be the absolute key. Because while I give respect to Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram, and I think Saquon Barkley is going to, you know, be one of those guys that, despite not being able to do it on an every down basis because of the status of the Giants offensive line, he's good for one or two breakout plays per game. He's going to get his in that regard. But the constant use of Odell Beckham is what drives the Giants' offense. And that means there's going to be a lot of work for Chidobe Awuzie and Byron Jones as well in order to try to stop that guy. So for me, that is the key matchup of this upcoming game. How are the Cowboys going to defend Beckham? Because we've been here in the past with lesser defensive back units, with lesser secondaries, no Chris Richard. We're in important matchups. The Cowboys' secondary has been abused. It has to stop now, and I want to see it on Sunday night.
And I believe that it will. I believe that it will for the two, you know, for a couple reasons. And you mentioned both names, and those two names are the two reasons I have: Chidobe Awuzie and Byron Jones. I think that both can, because OBJ, he's not the most physically imposing wide receiver, obviously, and that's going to work in the favor of a physical Chidobe Awuzie and in the favor of a very athletic Byron Jones. But if, to your point, if you can negate OBJ, look at what happened last week. He had 111 yards. He absolutely abused the Jacksonville Jaguars. But to further your point, his 111 yards was half the total of Eli Manning's passing production. So that tells you all you need to know about what the motor is or who the motor is for the Giants. It is not Saquon Barkley. It is still, in fact, OBJ. Okay. And like you said, Barkley, he's going to get his, just like he broke off, I believe, a 68-yarder there. But if you contain that, you take that 68-yard away from him. I mean, that was 57% of his rushing production. So that goes back to my matchup with the linebackers versus Barkley. But again, if the Cowboys are going to have to stop OBJ. I am right there with you. He cannot have a 100-plus yard game while the Cowboys offense is still trying to figure out what the hell they're doing. Unless they come out and drop, 27 points, and okay, well then, yeah, you could probably get away with a win and have OBJ, rack up over 100 yards, because that's happened before. However, this is not the same offense that we've seen in the past, as far as being able to impose their will. So job number one is going to have to be, like you said, shutting down OBJ. But man, even though Chidobe is nowhere near the talker that Jalen Ramsey is, he talks with those hands, though, sir.
They do.
Those hands be screaming. So yeah, I'm with that. I'm with that. I'm always for seeing OBJ get frustrated. And like you said, he's super paid right now, and it's too early in the season for him to get all flustered and let people get under his skin. But I think that the Cowboys and Awuzie can get physical with him to the point where you will start to see that frustration at least start to bubble. It won't boil over, I don't think, but it will in fact start to bubble. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and you're here with the Catch This Fade podcast. I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. Find me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL, and find my man Pat on Twitter at Voice of the Star. We are discussing the Cowboys 24/7. Oh, God, I just gave you another plug. Find Pat on Dallas 24/7 Sports. Give him the web address, man.
Just let it happen, man. Obviously, if you're mobile, CBS Sports app. Turn on your notifications for Cowboys news. If you're sitting at your desktop, it is 247sports.com/Dallas-Cowboys.
And you can, of course, read me on CowboysWire.com. And if you're mobile, open up the SportsWire app and make sure that you check off the box for Cowboys Wire to make sure that you're getting the latest and greatest on all things Cowboys. Now, Pat, what's the name of this podcast?
It is. Last I checked, let me check again. Just checked. Okay, cool. It's Catch This Fade, man.
Somebody's got to catch this fade, brothers and sisters, and I'm glad that you're here to join us, because my man Pat, we're going to give you guys two candidates for Catch This Fade this week, because honestly, with that 16-8 performance, there are a lot of fades that need to be served around Cowboys Nation right now. But I'm going to turn the floor over to my man Pat, and he is going to give you his nomination for the Catch This Fade Award of the Week.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's just cut straight to the chase, okay? There's no need to dance around the hedge with your pants down. It is Scott Linehan.
Sorry. You said dancing with your pants down.
Yeah, right. Catching that's notwithstanding. Listen, Scott Linehan, let's sit down and let's have a word, sir. Or let's step outside and have a word, proverbially. Obviously, I don't want to really hurt the guy. But your feels are definitely going to get hurt here. It is absolutely unacceptable what we're seeing from the Cowboys offense. It is absolutely unacceptable. Now, for those saying, well, Pat, don't overreact. It's only week one. No, we're not ready. No, you can get out of here. You can get out of here with that, because this is not an overreaction. This is a trend that I've identified, and a lot of other intelligent football IQ individuals, such as my compatriot KD Drummond of the Cowboys Wire. See, I just repaid your plug. this is a trend that we're all noticing. Okay, this is a trend that is seeing the Cowboys average only 11.5 points per game over the course of the last four regular season games. This is a trend that has the Cowboys offense scoring only one touchdown in the last 10 regular season quarters. No, we're not ready. Hold that thought. This is a trend that's seen Dak Prescott's yardage in the last four regular season games descend from 212 yards to 181 to 179 to 170 yards. No, we're not ready. You better get ready, because this is real. Okay. This trend. And one more step, 11 of 11, right? They're 11-11 in the last 22 games after going 11 straight, and after rattling off those 11 straight wins. This is disturbing, okay? You went and you did a complete overhaul with the assistant coaching staff, and we were promised that things would change. You went ahead and you cut Dez Bryant. Now, this is not me saying that Dez Bryant would change anything right now, because I don't believe it would, because Dez Bryant played three of the last four regular season games I just mentioned, and they were inept as an offense. Ezekiel Elliott played three of the last four regular season games that I just mentioned, and he's averaging 0.5 touchdowns over the course of those last four games. If you're not ready to talk about a potential hot seat under Scott Linehan. I don't know what you're watching, who you're paying attention to. They went and made the trade for Tavon Austin. Lightning in a bottle, we were promised. Okay. Oh, well, they're not unleashing the playbook in the preseason, justifiably so. But oh, but you wait. But you wait until week one. You're going to see what this Tavon Austin situation is. Oh, okay. So here we are. 10 offensive snaps, 48 fewer than Jeff Swaim, the tight end. 0 catches, 1 rush for 1 yard. Please, I can hardly curb my enthusiasm. Get out of here. Okay, this offense is stalling. It is not an aberration that it occurred in week one of 2018. It's a conversation that needs to be had completely. And if you're wondering why Scott Linehan left immediately after week one, after that game at Bank of America Stadium without giving the media an opportunity to address him, it's because his ass is hot. It doesn't matter what Jerry Jones says and how he tries to sell us on the fact that the reason he left without saying anything was because he didn't want to speak on the Gregory situation. Not buying it, Mr. Jones. Jason Garrett, we have, quote unquote, tremendous faith in Scott Linehan. That might be true, but that's just because that's a weird dynamic between mentor and mentee. And it's dysfunctional. But at the end of the day, you're not going to convince me that Scott Linehan is not on the hot seat. Just like you're not going to convince me that if this team rattles off 3 wins in a row, that it's not in spite of Linehan as opposed to because of Linehan. This team, miss me with the whole, this team has talent, right? Because they do, right? So everybody's like, oh, well, they don't have playmakers. Yes, they do. Michael Gallup is a playmaker. Tavon Austin can make plays. Allen Hurns can make plays. He's a former Pro Bowler, okay? Ezekiel Elliott, are we kidding me? Do I even have to say his name? Right. This offense has playmakers. OK, the problem is twofold. One, you have a quarterback that is not progressing, but is in fact regressing. And half of that is on him. The other half is it's the OC's job to develop the quarterback and do things like give him a capable quarterback coach. Instead, you gave him a perennial backup who lost his job to an undrafted free agent quarterback only 12 months or less before you gave him the job to coach your franchise quarterback going into his third year that you're probably going to enter into a second contract with in only 6 months from now. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Linehan has to catch all the fade, not 10% of the fade, not 65% of the fade, 100% of the fade, and any extra credit fade that may be laying around. I'm done.
It's impossible to argue with what you're saying in your Catch This Fade segment. I already brought up the point that the Cowboys have had an offense that has worked under Scott Linehan, but it's obvious that over the last 9 games, it's no longer working. We need to know who it was that decided that they were going to let Chaz Green move from right tackle to guard and then back to tackle. That the whole butterfly effect, you know, butterfly effect is my thing. It is absolutely my thing. And it all started with that move, and everything has been spiraling out of control ever since that happened. The downfall of the Dallas Cowboys has been the decision not to keep Chaz Green on the outside and let Jonathan Cooper be the left guard from day one in 2017 and all that came with it. That is the issue. So for me, I was really looking forward to seeing the offensive line come out and prove that it was an aberration. Frank Pollock was the issue. And even though they were missing Travis Frederick, and it's a big caveat, Paul Alexander got to catch this fade.
Ooh, let me hear it now.
The offensive line looked horrible. I mean, horrible. It was unimaginable that they watched on the very first screen Teron Smith get a block in the back, negate the screen to Tavon Austin that would have gotten them close for a first down, got him moving on the first drive. We saw Connor Williams, who has a lot of talent, look absolutely overmatched when it came to the power. You're telling me that Paul Alexander hasn't taught him enough to be able to overcome that lack of power, the techniques, the things of that sort? Lael Collins, penalties. Zach Martin, he had a decent game. He was really the only one. They were giving up sacks left and right. And yes, some of the sacks were on Dak Prescott. That is completely understandable. There was a whiff by Ezekiel Elliott where he wasn't sure what was going on with Tyron Smith. I've never seen Tyron Smith play as bad of a game in his entire life. Now listen, when Tyron Smith got injured in the preseason and everybody was kind of looking, only talking about Travis Frederick and about, at the time, Zach Martin's knee, and I was like, why is nobody paying attention to Tyron Smith and the fact that they are still holding him out? Oh, it's just precautionary. He's getting old. You don't play with backs, all that kind of stuff. It might be time to be worried about Tyron Smith, folks. And I know as much as that hurts you to hear, this offensive line, even when Travis Frederick comes back, may never be again what it once was. And part of that has to do with Paul Alexander. We all convinced ourselves, because we do it every offseason, every move that the Cowboys make, we justify it. We look for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow in hopes that they're making the right moves. But when
not to interrupt, because I'll let you continue, but I didn't like the Alexander move.
When you talk,
and I have the receipts to prove it.
When
but
you
continue.
Talk to people from Cincinnati, and just like I had questions about everybody saying Tavon Austin was going to be the savior, bitch, where? Like, sorry, excuse me. I'm regressing to a former self of mine. That was in the edit.
I love it.
When the
Cowboys, this is what they signed, do to us, man. This is what they
listen,
do.
When the Cowboys signed Alexander out of Cincinnati, you should have heard the people from Cincinnati talking trash. Like, are y'all serious? That really y'all want Paul Alexander? Please, can we gift wrap him to you? And from everything that I saw in the first game, again, with the caveat that you can never really make forward spinning judgments for the entire season off of just one game, especially the first game, when you're dealing with not preparing over the course of the preseason and all that kind of stuff. For all we know, the Cowboys get a couple games under their belt and they could go off like rocket ships. But all we can do is judge off of what we saw. And the Cowboys had 3 weeks to get better without Travis Frederick, and the offensive line was in shambles in week one. Now, granted, the Carolina Panthers have a strong defensive front. Kawan Short, Don Terry Poe, love both of those guys on the interior. It ain't going to get easier. I already talked about the matchup with Dalvin Tomlinson and Damon Snacks Harrison. It doesn't get easier on and on down the line when you look at the schedule. Just the same way that Lyle Collins had issues with all of the top flight defensive ends and edge rushers that he was going to have to face in his first year at right tackle. That's the same kind of thing that these guys are going to have to face on the interior of the line with Connor Williams and Joe Looney for the foreseeable future, because we really don't know whether or not Travis Frederick is coming back. I myself personally think that they're putting the spin on it like they did with Jalen Smith. Oh, positive vibes. We're not going to put him on IR. Let's keep positive thoughts so that, you know, the power of mind over matter and all those things are great. But the reality is we don't know when Travis Frederick is going to come back, so we don't know how long we're going to be dealing with this combination in the middle. And my issue is that Paul Alexander, 30-year veteran, did not have these guys ready to play come week one. So for me, although there is a easier target to pick with Scott Linehan, I've seen Scott Linehan do positives for this Cowboys team in the past, and although I'm worried about the last 9 games, the only thing I have to go on with Paul Alexander is week one, and they stunk. Paul Alexander, you got to catch this fade.
I like it. And kind of going back to what I was talking about, when they made the hire, I did not like it. I did not seek to justify it because there was a scheme issue. There was a scheme issue. And I wrote an entire column on my concern shortly after that hire. Might have been the same day, might have been 24 hours later. But it pointed out my issues with the scheme difference between what Paul Alexander was running for those decades in Cincinnati versus what the Cowboys primarily run with their zone blocking scheme. I didn't see how it was going to work. Now, that's not to say it won't work, but it hasn't in the first game. So my concerns at the moment seem well-founded. I hope ultimately he proves me wrong. But the fact that he's catching your fade doesn't bode well for him, because it means that you're seeing the same things that I had concerns about going in. So while you have a fantastic, fantastic fade that you just threw, let me ask you a question. No, it's not a shade. It's a simple question. Let me ask you a question. Who is Paul Alexander's immediate supervisor?
Scott Linehan.
All right. I'm done. I'm done. All right. And I say that to say this. Yes, it goes to the top and Jerry makes the final decision. And then, you know, under Jerry is Steven and then kind of tied with Will. And then underneath them, you got Jason Garrett. Right. But it's the offensive coordinator's job to piece together his assistant coaching staff, just as it's Rob Marinelli's job to piece together his. And then they come together and have these conversations with the head coach and the VP of personnel and, you know, the owner. And then they go from there. So the fact that Paul Alexander has to catch your fade after 1 week when he has concerns, or he had concerns, I had concerns for him and, you know, coming into this, it goes back to who I'm throwing the fade at. It's Scott Linehan. He's the one who saw Paul Alexander, knew it was not a perfect scheme fit, knew there were going to be potential scheme issues, and still turned to Jason Garrett and said, I would like to sit down with you and Steven and Will and Jerry because I think this is going to be a good fit. Well, listen, so, I fully agree with you on Paul Alexander. But the fade that you just threw, the only reason you are in a position to have to throw that fade is because the guy I need faded lobbied for him to come in the first place.
Well, let me go somewhere with that, because the guy that I was my runner up, the one that I was about to name for my catch this fade, was Stephen Jones, because he allowed the Cowboys to go into this season with this ragtag group. The reason that they hired Paul Alexander was most likely because everybody saw that this could possibly be a sinking ship with the coaching staff, and it's very hard to get up and coming guys when you're talking about a sinking ship. You have guys that were fired, you have guys that were let go. You don't really have guys that are poaching from other teams in order to come be a part of this. Stephen Jones, for my money, is doing a bad job right now when it comes to constructing this coaching staff. And I'm putting it on him, not Jerry. Jerry isn't hiring these coaches, but it was Stephen Jones who signed off on whatever power struggle happened that allowed Scott Linehan to come in and name his staff. It was Stephen Jones that was in charge of that whole ordeal that saw four out of five position coaches on the offensive side go, but the man in charge remained after the way that they ended last season. I was ready for them to cut bait with Jason Garrett, with Scott Linehan, with all of them. I was ready for them all to go, but Stephen Jones is the one that came back and said, no, we're going to stick with this. We have the whole family atmosphere. Jerry Jones obviously has a lot to do with keeping Jason Garrett, but not forcing Garrett to fire Linehan? Come on, bro. That has Stephen Jones written all over it. Now,
and I agree, but I'm not going to let you PS this thing. Okay. Not going to let you add an addendum.
I'm your PS. Asterisking.
No, we're not even. No. Because you're going to hold the L for Alexander, even though I agree. I'm simply saying he's a subheader when it comes to catching the fade,
we all know how these competitions go. You give the answer that the general public likes, and I give the answer that the thinking public likes. It's all good. I'm prepared to take this L. You can put it up for a poll. You can do whatever you need to do to make yourself feel better about it.
What really just happened is you got that high tanned, okay, and you figured, oh, well, let me go and try to figure out how to make the fade for Steven. And I agree. The fade is for Steven because it moves up. It's so much fade to go around. But if you're going to fade Paul Alexander, then, you know, you're basically agreeing indirectly or even directly with my fade, which is Scott Linehan. And then we can go above that and say, yeah, everybody else needs to catch that fade. But I agree. Paul Alexander was not a good fit. And there's still a ton of football. Ladies and gentlemen, there's still a ton of football left. We are not writing this team off after week one. What we're doing is telling you what went wrong, what needs to be fixed, and our projection for what's going to happen in the next week. And, you know, at the end of the day, this team has a ton of talent, and it may just be a situation where the talent's going to have to play at all pro levels in order to, you know, mask the deficiencies elsewhere, and like your play calling and some of your scheme issues. And that could very well happen. And I think they have the talent to do it. Will it happen? That's what we're waiting to see. I still hold on to my prediction of 11-5, even though they pretty much, you know, kind of busted my bracket initially because I had them beating the Panthers, and they should have. But I think they'll make up for that somewhere down the road, and it'll kind of wash itself out. And I still think they end 11-5. Better to take your ass whooping up front than in the back. So that's the silver lining here, is that the Cowboys are learning a lesson early in the season, but what they cannot afford to do is drop two straight in the NFC with one of them being in the NFC East. That cannot happen.
We already know what happens if you fall to 0-2 in the season. We've had one team in 2017 that went 0-2 to start and then made the playoffs. That was the New Orleans Saints. We had one team in 2016. But there are always a handful of teams that start 0-2 and do not make the playoffs. Since 1990, since 2012, whatever metric you want to look at, 12% of teams that start 0-2 actually end up making the playoffs. The difference when you're 0-1 between a win and a loss is 31%. For your playoff chances. If you win, it's a 31% difference as opposed to if you lose for your chances to make the playoffs. This is an elimination game for all intents and purposes between the Cowboys and the Giants. And I hope you know that we are fully 100% rooting for the Cowboys to turn around everything that we've discussed here on this show and on previous shows when we talk about things. There's a lot of fans that don't understand that you can still be a diehard fan and still be critical of your team. It is not all sunshine, roses, and giggles, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not.
There is something wrong with this team. There is a chance for them to fix it. We hope they fix it, and we will be here to applaud them when they do fix it. But for now,
as always,
for now, we have to discuss what's going wrong. And that's what we're doing here on Catch This Fade.
And to KD's point, and then we'll kind of bring it to a close here. Only 12% of NFL teams who start 0-2 make the playoffs. This team is not.
I just said that.
Yeah, but I'm using twice. That to kind of build.
I need you to pay attention.
You gotta let me cook. You gotta let me cook. See, you're sniffing my chili. But okay. You didn't put in on this, man. Okay. Stop. What kind of DMV nonsense is that? Okay, but to KD's point, only 12% of the NFL teams make it. This team is not I believe it's a very talented team. However, Drew Brees is not on this team. So Sean Payton is not the coach of this team. And I say that to say this is not the 2017 New Orleans Saints. But also look at the odds going forward. The Cowboys right now, I can't remember if it was Bovada, Odd Shark, or maybe even Sportsline, but I read earlier that the odds are if the Cowboys at 0-1, the Cowboys odds for going 9 wins, that's pretty much what it is. The bet is that they're going to go 9 wins starting with 0-1. If they go 0-2, that drops to 5 wins. That should terrify the Cowboys. Yep. Okay. And it should bring a very real reality to Cowboys fans that want to say, oh, please, whatever you do, this is me to you. Do not subscribe to what Jerry Jones tried to sell you earlier in the week with that 1993 reference. Okay.
Nah.
Don't do it. That team was coming off of a Super Bowl win. They had a first overall pick at quarterback who was also Super Bowl MVP of that Super Bowl. I just referenced them winning. The only reason, for the most part, that they went 0-2 was because of the absence of Emmitt Smith, the league's leading rusher. He came back in week 3. They rattled off 7 straight wins, 12 of the remaining 14. That's not this team. So this team does not have, although they're talented, they're not the 93 Cowboys. They need this win in the worst possible way. Otherwise, like you said, KD, maybe not now, but down the road, they could end up finding out that week 2 was the elimination game.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You know what it is. Again, follow us on Twitter. I am at KD Drummond NFL. He is at Voice of the Star. You know what it is. We're here to talk Cowboys football with you 24/7, 365 days of the year. Make sure you follow us. Find us on CowboysWire.com, Dallas 24/7 Sports. Search us. Google us. You know what it is. We're out of here. Salute.
Salute.
21 pounds. I'm not a typical arrogant American known prescribed medicine. I'm sick as I ever been. Rolling out of the dealership in the McLaren. These rappers is Peter Pan. I'm Pan-African. Space Invader blacking them. Mixing Alexander McQueen with Hayter Ackerman. Real rapture in the form of a living man. I don't give a damn. Not a mortal could test me. See, I don't get exams. I'm a high priest and a wild beast. Once warrior, now chief. The mouthpiece of the foul east. And I'm a rock'em sock'em robot hop. I drop bombs any flow I got. Come at you like .coms, you should know why I'm not. For the run of the mill drill, I'm still trill. The flamethrower, the real deal. I don't coincide with the oddness, your highness. It's with a pantheon of the gods, as I promise. I know for being brutally honest. If lyricism is fairer true to you, then rewind this. I'm a killer, but it ain't about to be with kindness. I believe
see the industry about to see a conquest. Changing of the mindset, money just a concept, never been an object. Even when my mother was living up in the project, now my rating is high than young Richard Pryor yet. Still speaking my mind, just in a different dialect.
It takes two to make anthropology, the student and the studied. That being the case, it is time for the study to examine the student and to evaluate its own.
I said, I've seen it all and had it all, and I ain't mad at all. This rapper talks gravitas like a cannonball, staying up all night, throwing my sleep pattern off. I need a doctor on call to keep Adderall. Position of my